tomato juice and vodka as a Bloody Mary. I don't think I've anything I've heard where it's a raw egg and orange juice.
I mean, in Beauty and the Beast, Gaston ate 5 dozen raw eggs, but...
They didn't blend it with orange juice.
He's also animated.
I also love the fact that this is the takeaway from watching a film classic.
Yes.
My takeaway from it was I was heavily distracted that Atreyu is kind of a good-looking kid, that he looks just like the actress Anna Kendrick.
He does. His name is Noah Hathaway. And, yeah, in this movie, he looks a lot like Anna Kendrick.
The whole time I'm watching it going, this could be redone with Anna Kendrick.
Although I don't think she could have her shirt as open as often as he does.
Don't tell Anna Kendrick what to do. I will not tell her not to. But the movie was good. I liked it. I felt it held up, and the parts about the movie that are good are still good.
Mm-hmm.
The practical effects.
Absolutely.
Because there's no digital at the time.
No.
It's all practical effects.
They had just gotten the technology of the blue screen.
Yeah, not green screen.
Not green screen, blue screen. So they could have Atreyu on Falcor flying through the air in the, you know, stock 80s cloud shot.
This is a point that I made during the viewing of this movie. It's that it seems like every 80s movie has stock footage of clouds and flying through clouds.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Back to the Future.
The Aviator.
Back to the Future 2, not Back to the Future. Back to the Future 2.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, it's just da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, do the credits through scrolling clouds.
Mm-hmm.
You have Top Gun. You have all these ones that are the never-ending story. It's just, let's do our credits through clouds as we fly through them.
But, you know, it's kind of a style thing. So in the 80s, it was clouds. In the 2000s, it was water. You started out over the water and then you ended up on a skyline of some kind or a beach or something. There's a lot of movies from the early to mid-2000s that started over water. So we went from the air to the sea.
So if you're wearing parachute pants, you're watching movies with clouds. And if you were wearing carpenter jeans, then you were watching water.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
The great part about this movie, yeah, was, like I said, the effects. It's beautifully done.
Mm-hmm.
We watched the 30th anniversary Blu-ray, so they had gone through all of the getting rid of the static and all of the glitches and nastiness and painstakingly recreating it.
It looked beautiful.
And this is, a lot of people, I don't know, maybe they don't know, it's a German movie.
Yeah. It was the most expensive movie made in Germany at that time. And it's a German novel that they made into a movie. Into a German movie. A lot of people were very apprehensive of it because the book was so beloved that they were afraid of it translating into the film. And we actually watched a little bit of the special features afterwards of the making of it, and it was actually quite interesting, the screenwriter and the director and the producer talking about making this movie and how the author of the book hated it and tried to stop production and stop the release of the movie. And actually openly talked about this, that it came down to the wire. He actually sued them over the use of the name of the book, and he lost, and the film was released, and now it's a beloved classic.
And see, it's stuff like that that you don't hear of all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's what you do when you get into things late.
Yeah.
You're able to find all the fun backstories.
Mm-hmm.
The kids now, it's hard to watch this and go, wow, that was 1984. And then they interview a lot of the kids. The childlike princess is actually a really beautiful woman.
Mm-hmm. Childlike empress.
Sorry. She's a very beautiful woman now.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly enough, the one that looked like Anna Kendrick, he's grown up and he now looks like
Hank Azaria.
He looks like Hank Azaria. We'll have pictures on our website.
Yes.
And links to all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. He looks like Hank Azaria, but with tattoos.
That's right. He owns a tattoo parlor in LA with his wife. That's what he does in real life now. But, yeah, as a child, he looks like Anna Kendrick. As an adult, he looks like Hank Azaria.
And the kid who plays Bastion, he kind of looked like Ethan Embry.
Mm-hmm. And he hasn't really done a lot since this movie. Actually, the three child leads, the childlike Empress, Atreyu, and Bastion, the three of them didn't really go on to do very much more acting. Actually, I think that Noah Hathaway, the kid who plays Atreyu, is in a couple of movies now and coming out in the future nothing real big named, but he's in a couple of things. But the Childlike Empress, now she's a dance instructor, I believe.
So they're not doing the never-ending backstory?
No.
Okay.
No.
So they're not doing the prequel. They're not doing the sequel. Well, they made sequels, but they're not doing the reboot sequel, kind of right. like a la The Force Awakens.
Exactly.
It's no longer the Artax Awakens or anything.
Oh, and that scene was still heartbreaking.
It is. And that horse looks absolutely terrified because he's really in neck deep in water.
Mm-hmm. They have an elevator underwater that lowers the horse down. And they were talking about how they were so excited with the reaction they got from the horse, because the horse looks quite scared, that, you know, they put him down into the water a couple of times so that he could get used to it, so that he would know that, you know, he's not going to die. But then you add Atreyu crying and yelling at him, and the horse is like, what is going on? And they said that the horse was reacting a lot differently when they actually shot the scene than he was in rehearsals, because, you know, Noah Hathaway is that good of an actor.
The directors, they had shots of the directors and producers just openly bawling.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That scene traumatized a whole generation.
Well, after watching the movie, I'm kind of inclined to agree with the author just about the ending. Because mm-hmm. they said that they stuck to it pretty well, but they added the ending. And I think that was where he had his biggest problem. And I even said before we saw the special features that said this, I said to you, I'm like, it was good, but I felt like the ending was out of place. Like, mm-hmm. it felt a little ridiculous.
Well, one of the problems is that so it is based on a book. Mm-hmm. And the movie actually ends at the halfway point of the book. And so they didn't have a way to end it. And so, yeah, they decided to bring him back into Bastion's world, the quote-unquote real world, or Earth, or however you want to put it. And, yeah, it did feel a little weird.
Yeah, and Atreyu's not green.
Right, yes. Apparently in the book he is green. I really need to read this book. But he's green, and they tried to make him green with makeup, and he just ended up looking like fungus.
Well, that, the Falcor puppet, it took 25 people to operate that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that thing is huge. Yeah. He is very large.
Well, you know, that horse scene also took 2 months to film that scene.
Yeah, that's not surprising. It's a very big scene.
And it cost $130,000 a day.
Whew, that's an expensive swamp of sadness.
I prefer the fire swamp myself in The Princess Bride.
Yes.
So if you're going to go for one of these type of fantasy movies, I'm always going to be Princess Bride. Neverending Story was good, though. Mm-hmm. It holds up, and I watched it, and I enjoyed it, as opposed to other movies that are geared towards a younger audience, mm-hmm. and if you catch it late in life, it doesn't grab you.
Doesn't quite hold up, yeah. It, you know, before we started the movie, I was thinking, man, I loved this movie when I was little, and, oh, it's so much better than the sequel. The sequel wasn't nearly as good. And then as we're watching it, I'm, of course, on IMDb, because that's what I do, and I was starting to look at information on the sequel, and I was like, wait a minute. Yeah, I remember that part. Oh, that was in the sequel? That's not in the original. That's in the sequel. And actually, now that I give it some thought, I really did like the sequel. The sequel was very good.
It just didn't have any of the original kids, because by the time they got to that, it was 6 years later.
Right.
And all of those kids were in their late teens.
Yeah, so Bastion, Atreyu, and the Childlike Empress have been recast. But you know what? I actually think it works for this story, because Atreyu and the Childlike Empress and all those characters in Fantasia are all a product of Bastion's imagination. You're not necessarily going to picture them the same the first time you read the book versus later in life when you read the book. Your actual mental images could change. And I think having the actors different can represent that the way you think of things can alter.
Except for it doesn't really help the fact that Bastion's changed.
Well, he's older. He's going to look a little different.
Sure.
I mean, he dyed his hair blonde.
We won't get into semantics of that. However, the one thing I was really impressed with was that part near the end where it's like an inception. It is, we are a book that you are reading, and you are now being watched by an audience who has been with you the whole time while you're being chased by the bullies. They mention themselves being referenced by Bastion, who is then being watched by the movie viewer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very meta.
Whoa, I was actually quite impressed with that.
Yeah, there's a great scene at the end where the Empress is asking Bastion for his help. Why won't you do this thing you're supposed to do? And she looks dead into the camera, and she is talking to the audience, not so much just Bastion, but the viewing audience watching this movie. It's very Peter Pan, and, you know, you have to believe in the fairy, you have to clap, and it's asking for people outside of its own story to believe that it's real so that Tinkerbell can be resurrected. Yeah, it's a nice little... It gets a little more philosophical there towards the end.
Yeah, do you know where Bastion's hometown is, like, in filming?
I believe it was in Canada.
Yeah, Vancouver, Canada.
Yeah.
See, that's what's great about this. We learn things, and then we go on and look up fun trivia facts.
Yeah, all the Fantasia shots and scenes were shot in Germany, and then Bastion was in Canada. Now, I know that... You had a little bit of trouble warming up to Falcor.
Yeah, his first initial bit is a little pedophilic. Is that even a word? It's like a pedophile.
Yeah.
But it's pedophilia? Okay, I'm going to get off that. But he's really weird. Like, Atreyu's muddy and...
Injured.
And injured, and all of a sudden he wakes up and he's completely clean and changed clothes. I'm like, okay, so did the dragon do this? Did he get the kid... redressed, and then he's like, I like kids, and then he winks at him, and I'm like, this feels a little Cosby like. He's like, you were asleep, and I like kids, and I'm like, whoa, not cool.
Sneaking away so soon, yeah.
It was like if Trey was gonna go take the walk of shame, and I was not cool with that.
You know, and as watching it as an adult, I can absolutely see where you're coming from with that. Watching it as a child, of course, that was not at the forefront of my mind. And he's just, you know, and they actually mentioned this. The director mentions this, that when they were making the dragon, they wanted him to be warm, they wanted him to be inviting, they wanted him to be lovable, and so they gave him the face of a dog. They wanted him to look more like a dog, but they didn't anticipate people referring to him as the flying dog. They're like, no, he's a dragon. And myself, I never thought of him as a dragon, even though he calls himself a dragon, a luck dragon. I'd never thought of him as a dragon. He's just a giant flying dog.
And the first time I saw it, I had much different thoughts. Well, it's time for us to take a break. We are going to have a special guest.
Very
in the
special.
In the next segment.
Mm-hmm.
It is somebody that we would count as famous.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, super cool. We are going to be Skyping in an interview with him. It is one of the... Well, do you want me to wait and surprise people?
Let's surprise, yeah.
Okay, I'm not going to say what it is. Or who he is, but it's a he.
It's a he.
It's a he. So that'll give narrow it down to at least half of the population of this planet.
There you go.
So stick around. We will have more coming right up. You're listening to We're a Little Behind on KCNR, 1460 AM.
Are you a clever person who knows things and likes to play games to prove it? Do you totally love what is being discussed in this show right now? Do you often hope that you know just a bit more than other people on a topic? Well then, you're exactly who we're looking for. Come to Trivia Night at Sweet Spot every Monday at 6:30 p.m. It's fun, it's free, and it's hosted by me, CJ DeAngelis. Bring some friends, put a team together, and prepare to show off your wealth of useless knowledge. And if that's not enough to entice you to participate, we also have mystery prizes for the winners. That's Trivia Night every Monday night at 6:30 at Sweet Spot, located at 1675 Hilltop Drive in Reading, next to Tokyo Garden.
Are you looking for a photographer to capture that perfect look and feeling? Look no further than Photos by Lauren of the Magic Haberdasher. Serving the Shasta and Tehama County areas, you're sure to get the right look to capture any timeless moment. Family portraits, pets, headshots, senior photos, special events, simple real estate, and so much more. Her photos have been featured in magazines, digital and print ads, showcased in multiple local theaters, and many other professional uses. For photos that are always professional and always gorgeous, go with the Magic Haberdasher. Call Lauren at 818-378-5250 for more information and to schedule your photo shoot today.
Save, save, save at Reading Kia's Customer Appreciation Tent Sale this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Reading Kia says thank you with big discounts on every new Kia in stock.
This Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 418 East Cypress Avenue, Reading Kia, ReadingKia.com.
While serving in Iraq, Sergeant Jason Nielsen suffered a paralyzing injury. Paralyzed Veterans of America's service officers are trained to help injured veterans get all the benefits they've earned. To help paralyzed veterans, visit PVA.org.
Cold weather is quickly approaching Northern California. Give SST Oil a call today to hear their competitive prices for home heating fuel. Veterans are offered a 5% discount on heater sales and services and a 5% discount on home heating fuels. That's SST Oil. Give them a call at 241-1167. That's 241-1167. SST Oil. SST Oil supports our veteran community.
North Valley Stand Down is an effort to reach out to veterans who are suffering from the effects of poverty and who need help. A wide variety of free services and necessities will be offered to veterans in need. Transportation is available. Stand Down 2017 is at the Shasta District Fairgrounds in Anderson, Thursday, October the 26th through Saturday the 28th. It's all free with no strings attached and nothing to fear. For information on how to get help, call 605-8114.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearm Instruction. Have you ever thought about obtaining firearms training but just can't seem to find the time? Call me at 530-999-1822 for a private class where you and your party can enjoy the finest in firearm safety training on your schedule and at your location. There's never a need for firearms or ammunition. We provide everything. Call Northern Firearms Instruction today at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at readingccw.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
And now, back to our show.
So, welcome back to We're a Little Behind. We're actually have one of our most famous guests.
Woohoo!
This is high tech for us because we're trying this through Skype.
Because we're a little behind and Skype's been around for a while, and we're just now.
We're not just now learning how to use Skype. We're just now learning how to get it through the radio board.
Sure. So, we believe you.
So this is Barry McLaughlin. One of the creators of Game Night in a Can, which is super fun. It's a tin can that has all of these cards that fit in the can, and on the lid of the can is a spinner, and it has a rule book, which is literally like 3 pages long, and by 3 pages, I mean they are probably about maybe 3 sentences each. It's really fun. So this is not a... Yeah, one of the worst things that I think we can do with this is you'll get, like, games and you'll open them up, and you have to sit there for an hour and a half reading rules, and then it's, like, all these teeny tiny ways of having to figure out minuscule amounts of rules, and you're just like, why am I sitting here for this long? Game Night in a Can is amazing. It is super easy. Like, you just open it up, you have all these cards, and then you pick judges. And there's, like, no small pieces that you need. You get some pens. You can get a dry erase board, whatever you want to keep track of. And you just have fun with your friends.
So Barry, how did this all start? Where did you come up with this idea?
Sure. So I guess first off, my partner and co-creator, Jason, is not here today because they are literally days or minutes away from having their third child.
Right, okay. I guess that's a reasonable excuse.
We'll accept that.
It's a decent excuse. So we were hosting and still are live game nights in Los Angeles. And it started, I guess, over 10 years ago. We were just playing games at our house. And we would create versions of games and just make them our own. So we had a version of Baldur Dash where instead of... actually having one real definition and a few fake ones and trying to guess. The idea was that you just took turns. One person made up a word, and then everybody just wrote a ridiculous definition to it, and you picked your favorite. Awesome. And that was it. And we called it Dirty Balderdash because people always got really dirty with it.
Of course.
As well, good friends usually do.
Exactly. And then that kind of morphed into doing these other games where we took Trivial Pursuit and would do, we would have teams, so about 3 teams, maybe 3 or 4 teams, and every 20 minutes we would stop playing Trivial Pursuit and do a physical challenge. And so we'd go back and forth between trivia and these physical challenges and games of skill. And then that became a game that we played in bars, and then it just kept kind of morphing into these different games until essentially what became Game Night in a Can, we were playing at... the place called Club Faye Dodo, which was this really cool club in L.A., and then the Hollywood Improv. And after one night that was just really electric and everyone was just buzzing with creativity and was having so much fun, And afterwards, Jason said, we were both saying, like, how do we build this? How do we grow this experience? And Jason said, what about Game Night in a Can? It was our first, it was the first name we came up for. It was the first idea for it. And it still, from that point, took us about a year to actually sit down and commit to it. And then once we did that, we decided to do a Kickstarter and just figured out as we were going along how to make it happen.
And that's where I found the Kickstarter, and I saw this Kickstarter, and I'm like, this seems amazing, because our friends really love doing games. We have our one game master, his name is Kevin Shoemaker, and he loves board games, and he brought it to us, and we would get together almost every Sunday and play games, and we found this. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is perfect. And so we, you know, I funded this immediately and got mine, and we were on board and couldn't wait for it. And when we got it, I'm like, this is exactly what people need. Like, you don't have to sit there. It's just have fun with friends instead of sitting there racking your brain, getting angry. Like, there's no getting angry in this game.
Right. Yeah, it kind of doesn't matter who wins. You can still always have a winner, but it's all about just really getting ridiculous and being creative and playing and interacting in a way that we found you don't really get anywhere else.
Yeah.
Even with other games.
So what is your favorite game in there? Do you have a favorite that you're just like, this is the one that we want to be remembered for?
I mean, Frumpy Bumpers is just so insane. From the name to the fact that you're just bumping butts for 30 seconds, it just makes me laugh. I don't know if you guys have played that one yet.
I believe we have. Go ahead and read the rules.
All right, so beware the bumps that go frump in the night. You just pulled the dreaded Frumpy Bumpers. Here's how it goes. Rotating host. Hit spinner for first player. They pick their teammate. Hit spinner for opposing player. They pick their teammate. Teams is each team sends two players. Each team has 30 seconds to see how many times they can bump butts. Teams can use any formation they like. Teams with the most bumps win.
It's like Twister, but with even less complication.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you got the Kickstarter going, and was it funded quickly? Like, did you find people were smart about this and got on board quickly?
It was we had a really good surge in the beginning, and then I got really busy at work. I work in advertising. I write commercials and campaigns and things. And Jason is a TV development exec, and around the same time he had newborn twins. So the timing worked out in that I think they maybe even had the kids right around the beginning of Kickstarter. I don't remember, but I know that about a week in.
So he is a procreator.
He is a pro creator. And well, more specifically, his wife.
Yeah. I mean,
Jason gets to do the fun part.
Exactly. So now, you actually, as part of the Kickstarter there, because with Kickstarter you get lots of levels, so you can, like, you can fund a small, like, $2 thing, and they'll, like, send you a thank you in the notes or whatever on some Kickstarters. And then this one you could, like, buy a game, buy two games. And then you got all the way down to, like, one of the really big ones was having a Game Night in the Can event live on stage, correct, with actor Jeremy Sisto, I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, Sisto was there. So Jeremy actually owns 5% of Game Night in a Can, because I was living in his guest house when we created this, and so it just felt like that opportunity was like an incubator. And so he's got 5% of the company. He and his wife Addie, who are both really, you know, amazing people and great friends, and they were just champions of the project, and, you know, helped with some brainstorming. And so Jeremy was there at the improv event. That was really fun. That was a big kickoff event. Normally we do our game nights in the smaller room at the improv, because it's more it's cozier, fits it better. But for that one, we had about 120 people, I think, show up. So we had a live jazz band, and we had stand-up comedians doing sets in between the games, and it was a really, really fun night.
Wow.
And that definitely helped boost the Kickstarter as well.
So for the uninformed and the uninitiated, you can now get this, not all, the big place that you want to get it anywhere easily is Amazon, correct? It's on Amazon.com. You can type
Amazon,
in Game Night in a Can and get it.
Yeah, so Amazon, and then we're in about somewhere between 50 and 60 independent toy stores.
Nice.
As well.
Nice, very nice.
So we've started growing. We only started doing retail this year. So in January, we started doing trade shows. We did New York Toy Fair, some shows in Atlanta, and then the Astra show, which is all the independent stores, was in Philadelphia. And so we started kind of picking up more and more stores at each place. We're on Uncommon Goods. We are doing a test run in Hot Topic right now.
Ooh. So, we actually have one of those in this town. We live in Redding, California, which is North California, Northern California, and it's a pretty small town. It's about, 100,000 people, I think? Yeah, it's small.
Okay.
But we do have a Hot Topic, so hopefully we'll see it in there. And if not, like I said, we are going to really promote the fact that you can get this game on Amazon.com because that's where a lot of us do our shopping.
Yeah, it's easy.
Yeah, it's a great price point too, and it's a really good price, and it's also like I said, super fun. It falls along the lines of like apples to apples for people who have played that, or even Cards Against Humanity. It's one of those things where you don't require a board, you don't need to be sitting around a table. It's more of an actual get up and discuss and have fun. It's kind of like Twister meets apples to apples. It's the discussion meets the physical,
I'll take that.
The physicality of it, right?
Like that.
And those are ones people know very well. You know, you're not sitting around like Monopoly, and by the time you're done with Monopoly, you're like, why have I gone around the board 18,000 times?
The beard starts growing in.
It does.
The children are crying. Yeah.
Now, is there anything?
I love Monopoly, but
yeah.
It can get rough.
It does. It's the one that you bring out at a cabin in the winter when you can't get TV reception and you need to kill 13 hours of your day.
Exactly. Waiting for the stew.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Do you guys have a favorite game in Game Night at Cannes?
You know, I'm trying to think because there's so many that are fun. I remember I really like the one where you write a ghost story.
Pants, Poop, and Scary Tales.
Yes, exactly. You write a ghost story in 7 minutes. And that one's fun because you get people. We're theater people, so we write really theatrical stuff. We go raid our costume closet in our house and bring out the full thing. So you know, so depending on how creative you are as a person, these things can get really intense.
Yeah, oh, I love that. The costume closet. I used to have costume closets.
Right.
One of my favorite things, and then I had to downsize it to a costume bag.
So is there any plans for expansion cards?
Yeah, we have room in the can for about 30 more games, and we have one pack of 15 in the works right now.
Nice.
So we're hoping to have that out by the beginning of 2018, and then we're also working on a few other games right now that I'm not sure if we can actually say yet, just because the way that the market is, people jump on things so fast now that you can say something, and if you haven't copyrighted it, it could be gone the next day. It's pretty bananas.
Well, you don't have to give us that. You can keep it all very secret. Just know that
we
want to know there is expansions in the works, so it keeps it going.
There are expansions, and there are more completely separate games that we're working
cool.
on as well.
Fantastic.
Very cool.
Yeah,
are they going to be more group games like this, or is it more like, you know, like, what do you call those? They're not role-playing games or anything like that. This is all, like, party games.
Oh, like strategy games?
Yeah. Or is this
more party games. So
okay.
We've got, we have a game that's essentially a dirty version of Game Night in a Can, so just the adult version of this.
Ooh,
and then
I'm already trying to think of names for that.
Yeah, hey, if you've got any fun ones, the last one that we were throwing around was Fart Your Face Off. I don't think that's going to be it, but it sounds funny.
That could be good. That could be good.
that might turn off too many people. I don't know. Or maybe it'll turn on the right ones.
Right?
Who knows?
That niche market.
Exactly. Yeah. And then we've got a game that is perfect for car rides.
Ooh.
So that will be coming out. We have a game that is a sort of a miniature golf game that you just create in your own house with objects around the house.
Oh, that sounds super fun.
Yeah, I can't wait to see all of
it. Yeah, we'll be on those. So if you have those, if you start those on Kickstarter as well, let us know, and we will be sure to not only fund those, but we will put links and stuff on our website and all that as well.
I love it. Thank you.
Thank you. So yep. we're going to take a break now. Is there anything else before we go? Is there anything else you think you might want to do? Any more plugs? Is there any way you're just like, oh, we're gonna be doing this, doing that? That you're just anything at all? Even if you want to say hi to mom, either one.
Oh gosh, now there's just so much pressure. Well, hello, mom. Hi, dad. I'm Molly. Jade, my wife. I've got a couple dogs. They're probably listening. I could just go on forever.
Go on and on. Okay. So that's game night in the camp. And so if you are an official person who, before we go, I will mention this, if you're an official person who has a game night in the can and you are now part of the community, you are called a what?
An honorary Nyakian.
And you pronounce it as Nyak. That's how you abbreviate game night in the can. Nyak.
Exactly.
And you're a Nyakian. And we just want to keep saying it because it's a fun word to say.
Right. It feels good. Nyak.
It does.
Nyakian. it's very satisfying.
All right. So we're going to take a break right now. This has been Chris and Jen Gomez with our very special guest, one of the creators of Game Night in a Can, Barry McLaughlin. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys. Congrats on the podcast.
Thank you.
You're listening to We're a Little Behind with Chris and Jen Gomez. We'll be right back. On KCNR 1460 AM.
If you live in the Reading area and have been contemplating going solar, now is the time. Hi, I'm Bruce Blake, president of the Powerhouse Solar. The state-mandated solar energy rebate currently offered by Reading Electric Utility is ending on October 31st. This rebate can put up to $5,000 cash in your pocket. If you've been told in the past that solar was not available in your area due to solar installation caps, those restrictions have been lifted for a limited time. Taking advantage of this rebate opportunity is simple. Call the Reading Electric Utility today, and they will give you a voucher number. Then call Powerhouse Solar, and we will design and install a state-of-the-art SunPower solar energy system to meet your family's specific energy needs. Powerhouse Solar is an elite dealer for SunPower and is the oldest SunPower dealership in California. Don't miss this opportunity. Call Powerhouse Solar today at 275-5600 or visit us on Facebook or at powerhousesolar.com.
Holiday Harbor, we've got it all for you. But we're more than just great houseboats. We have the vacation you have been looking for without the drive or airport hassle. Fishing boats, patio boats, 47-foot party cruisers, wakeboards, jet skis, and stand-up paddleboards. If it floats or you can pull it behind a boat, we probably have it for your enjoyment. Visit Holiday Harbor, exit 695 of Interstate 5, or go to LakeShasta.com. Holiday Harbor, your own vacation in town.
Reading Concrete is proud to help bring high school football to the radio here on KCNR 1460. Reading Concrete is your local ready mix concrete provider. Exceptional customer service and a quality ready mix product at competitive prices is our primary goal. Reading Concrete, located at 16855 Clear Creek Road. Give them a call at 530-244-7593 for your next concrete pour. Reading Concrete, serving you with a quality ready mix product.
Learn more about our shows and hosts. Check us out online at kcnr1460.com.
Welcome back to We're a Little Behind. I'm Chris Gomez.
And I'm Jen Gomez.
And that was really fun to have Barry on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
We even talked a little bit in between time the call ended and now doing this segment. And it was really fun. We talked about a lot of interesting things. Really cool guy. And we hope Jason, his baby, comes along quite nicely. Congratulations to him and his wife.
Absolutely.
So now let's talk about music.
Okay.
Something I'm getting into. It's not that I wasn't into this or I'm behind on this as per se. We didn't just discover this, but these are things I figured we'd talk about. I kind of realized that how much of the alternate grunge, like kind of post Nirvana, post Soundgarden, post Pearl Jam, all those ones that are really real grunge, these are the ones that kind of brought, I'm still kind of grungy, but I'm really a poppy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's these songs, there's a lot of them.
It's I'm really grungy, but I also like money.
Yes, exactly. I wouldn't necessarily say they sold out, but a lot of them are one-hit wonders.
That's true. They just wanted to sell out.
So we'll have a link to the playlist of all these songs that we're going to be talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of discussing these. A lot of them are one-hit wonders. So we'll talk about kind of what made them good and and some of their common denominators, so to speak. One of them, I realized, is that they're all pretty much white guys.
Mm-hmm.
Except for one.
Mm-hmm.
That's all white guys and Darius Rucker. Otherwise known as Hootie.
Hootie.
Yeah, Hootie of Hootie and the Blowfish.
Mm-hmm.
Rest of them are white.
And
not.
Hootie.
One of these things is not like the other. One of these guys is Hootie.
Yep.
So, but his name is Darius Rucker.
His name is Hootie.
But it's Darius Rucker.
Hootie.
But it's because it's called Hootie and the Blowfish, right?
Yeah, you don't name your band Someone and the Someones without the lead singer being someone. I mean, okay? It's not like Diana Ross and the Supremes. Oh, but the lead singer is not Diana Ross. That's not my name. Well, then why did you call your band name that? So if Darius Rucker is upset about being called Hootie, then he should not have named his band Hootie and the Blowfish.
Good, valid point.
Just saying.
There's a lot of songs that just you'll listen back and you go, oh, these are amazing. Like, some of them are still doing other things.
And sorry, side note, doesn't Hootie do country music now?
He does.
Okay. Just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, you can't look him up under Hootie to get to those country songs. You'd have to look him up under, I don't remember his name, because I just remember him as Hootie.
That's not true, though.
Yeah. No, it's, Darius Rucker is now a country singer.
Okay.
But we'll get to some of his in a little bit. But, like, there's some that went on to do other things, one of them being Ben Folds,
mm-hmm.
of the Ben Folds Five. He was a judge on the song, The Sing-Off.
The Sing-Off is one of my favorite reality competitions, and because I was in a cappella choirs in high school, and so The Sing-Off, for those who don't know, is an a cappella singing competition on NBC that they did a couple of years, and then they did a one-time, like, Christmas special or whatever. But it was various a cappella choirs from around the world, a lot of them collegiate because they're really big on college campuses, and they would compete a la American Idol. But the thing about it is that the judges on this show would actually give them constructive criticism that they would then implement for the next year. And, you know, with American Idol, Simon Cowell, of course, you know, he's the biggest name of the judges, and he's just mean, and he just says, you know, you're terrible, and it never really goes anywhere. Whereas on The Sing-Off, Ben Folds being the biggest name, one of the bigger names of the judges, they would actually critique them musically in terminology that, unless you're a music geek, you don't really understand. But it didn't matter because it was important for them. So I liked that it didn't really talk down to the audience. And it was just such a fun competition. I really wish they'd bring it back.
Well, if we're going to talk about music, we should probably actually play some.
All right.
I feel that that's probably the best way to go. So we will play some of the music that we're talking about,
yeah.
including Ben Folds 5. So this song is called Brick by Ben Folds 5, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a really pretty, slow song.
Ben is an amazing piano player, and his songs are all very beautiful.
Yeah. And it's, you know, this one's more of a heavy song than mm-hmm. a lot of other 90s songs. It's a pretty touchy subject matter. But it's where the rest of them are kind of very light and airy. This rode the gamut.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of songs that kind of do that in this list
mm-hmm.
that were of songs that we're playing. Some of them are happy, some of them are sad, but you still have the emotion from grunge still coming, riding the roller coaster down. The next one is Colorblind by Counting Crows, which was used in the movie, what is that one called? Cruel Intentions.
Cruel Intentions.
There we go.
Yes.
We'll get to it. You got to pull it somewhere. The data's kind of old, so I need to dust it off. This is Counting Crows, Colorblind.
I am colorblind.
I think that 90s grunge really made use of the piano very well.
Yeah. The another one is another song. This is Toad the Wet Sprocket. It's called Walk on the Ocean.
I always loved that band name because what?
Yeah, it makes no sense. I remember one of my favorite songs was used in an episode of Scrubs.
Mm-hmm.
Called Something's Always Wrong. It was with JD and his brother.
Mm-hmm.
And his brother, played by Tom Cavanaugh, who is now Dr. Wells on the TV show The Flash.
Right.
So, see, it's all these weird little tie-ins, you know. Then you have that's Toad the Wet Sprocket. Here's the Verve Pipe with The Freshman.
I love this song. And the song started playing on the radio when I was in high school, and I absolutely loved it, and so I had to have the album. So I bought the CD, and I listened to it, and this was the first track I listened to, which was actually track, like, 14. And I hated it, because it's just slightly different than the radio edit that plays over the air. And it's mostly his performance of the song. It just, he's got this quality in his voice in the radio edit that's not there on the album version. It just broke my heart. But I absolutely loved the rest of the album. So it's one of the instances where I bought the CD for a very specific song and ended up loving every other song on it.
Yeah. The next one is from a band who's actually going to be here in Reading on November the 8th at the Cascade Theater. This is the Gin Blossoms. Now, they have a lot of songs. I tell people now, go back in, listen to the Gin Blossoms, and you'll forget how many of them you actually remember.
Right? Yes. Yeah.
This is Hey Jealousy. The next one is Live, Lightning Crashes.
Beautiful song.
Oh, yeah. And the intro's really long, so we won't really get into that too much. But it's, because this is the album version, it's longer, much longer.
Mm-hmm.
It has a word in it that a close friend of ours can't stand, and I'm not going to say it, but Sam Fork, if you're listening, I'm going to skip this just so you won't have to hear it. You know what the word is.
I'm not saying it.
Soul Asylum. I almost feel like we're almost doing one of those Time Life infomercials where we're just like, all these songs can be yours on 27 CDs at like for $190 billion. The World I Know, Collective Soul. I mean, these are all songs that you probably don't even remember are the soundtrack of your entire decade of the 90s.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
You will hear these songs and remember exactly where you were. Mm-hmm. And now I really feel like one of those infomercials. Oh, yeah. This is Tonic, song If You Could Only See.
Which had two versions at the time in the 90s. It had more of a pop, and then it had more of a rock. It was all about the guitar.
This song, I can't hear anymore without thinking of the TV show How I Met Your Mother.
Mm-hmm.
Because apparently Ted Mosby was the one that found this song, and he was the coolest. He did not want to be like us. He did not want to be a little behind.
No.
And so he was like, I put my stamp of approval on something before any of you. And he tried to remember, and he counted this song as the pinnacle of his being in the first. He's like, I brought that song to all of you.
Yeah, do you know the band Dishwalla?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Counting Blue Cars. This is Better Than Ezra.
Living with you.
It was good. Which is the name of the song.
Yeah, and that...
They were just out there. No humbleness about it. It was good.
It was good.
What's your first single? Good.
Good.
So your first single's good? Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. How's the quality? Good.
Good.
Or how's the album sales? Good.
Good.
Do you think it's going to lead to other things? How do you think your future's looking? We're going to stop you right there. Not great. Now, this one is huge. This one's one of my absolute favorites. This album is called Everything You Want. The song is called Everything You Want. So it's the title of the song, title of the album, by Vertical Horizon. This album has not left my player in some shape or form since it came out in 99.
Mm-hmm. This, for a while there, this song was my Prius's favorite song.
Oh, because of the automatic shuffle on the car.
Yeah, so if I were to play from my jump drive, my flash drive, insert it into my car, and turned on the car, it would go to this song every time.
Every time.
Every time.
Yeah. Then one of the more happy songs, you see, it's riding up, we're going up on this, and it's like a very bipolar playlist. This is All For You from Sister Hazel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really catchy and fun and upbeat.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, oh, here he comes, the one guy of color in the entire list. It's Hootie.
It's
Darius
Hootie.
Rucker. It's the Blowfish.
Hootie.
It's Time. Time. I wanted to give him his moment. There you go. He had his time.
There you go, Hootie.
Now, if you were a kid who was around our age in the late 90s, right around the early 2000s, this is probably your high school song. This was your graduation song. This was your end of everything song. Everything school related. It's Tears to the Night by Eve Six.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I know a lot of people who are around our age who are just like, this song is everything right now.
Which is interesting that on Spotify it's listed as explicit, and there is nothing explicit in this song.
No. I think it's because the album is.
And the album, granted, one of the songs on the album has the B word. So I think because it's on the album, it gets associated with all of the songs on the album, and that's just not fair.
Not fair at all. This song is The Offspring's Gone Away, which I love The Offspring. Their Greatest Hits is one of the very best albums I own, and you can put it in and just love it. Gone Away is my absolute favorite song by The Offspring.
Mm-hmm.
It's so raw and emotional, and it's sad. It deals with the death of a loved one, and yeah, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
It's really tough to overcome that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, this next song, it reminds me of us. It was one of the first songs we karaoke'd together.
Yes.
I wasn't great at it. But I tried.
I tried. It's all right. And we actually played it at 2 a.m. as the bar was closing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And since it was my voice, it cleared it out a lot quicker. This one's really classic.
Yeah.
This was one of the few that you're probably still hearing now.
Oh, absolutely.
Whereas this next one, not as many people know, it's Fire Escape by the band Fastball,
mm-hmm.
who is better known for the song The Way.
The Way, yeah.
But this song is better.
I like The Way.
I'm not saying it's bad. I love The Way.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel this one sounds better.
Yeah.
And it's got that 90s feel.
It does. It really does.
Now, this song is Everclear's Father of Mine.
Mm-hmm.
Such a sad song. He wrote this from a place of abandonment.
You know, and if you listen to a lot of Everclear's songs, they all have a very similar theme.
Mm-hmm.
They're all that, you know, the hard knock life. And I actually saw them live in San Francisco. Their radio station, Alice, down there in San Francisco. They were having a free concert in Golden Gate Park. And Everclear was playing, and it was on Father's Day, and he took out his phone. He's like, all right, everybody needs to call their dads and wish them a happy Father's Day. I'm like, really? Really? All right.
And this next one is the son of the Nobel Prize winner.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is Bob Dylan's son,
mm-hmm.
Jacob Dylan, with the band The Wallflowers, with their biggest hit.
Mm-hmm.
Is it their only hit? I think it's their only hit.
Yeah, I think it counts as only hit.
Oh, I think Two Marias or Maria or something like that. Something I remember a Maria thing.
Yeah.
But this is the big one, One Headlight.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got his dad sound there.
He's
like I'm
a,
graveling.
He's
in
a
my
Bob
throat.
Dylan light. Because while he still has that quality to his voice, you can actually understand more of his words.
Oh, absolutely. It's very poetic, or at least it's trying to be. It's like mm-hmm. faux arty.
Yes.
Yeah. This one, still a cool song. Hanging mm-hmm. by a Moment, Lifehouse.
Mm-hmm.
You could not escape this from the radio about 17 years ago. And every time it comes on, I listen to it all the way through, and I don't think I'll ever get tired of this song.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of sad songs.
Oh, yeah.
Third Eye Blind, Jumper.
They were one of my first concerts. I saw them when they came to Reading, my freshman year of high school.
Do you know that he was engaged to Charlize Theron?
That's crazy.
Yeah. This is before she was really... Believe it or not, at the time, between him and her, he was the more famous one.
Do you know what his name is?
No. but I know what hers is. So obviously they've decided to, they both evaluated their career choices, and she made the correct one.
That's right. That's right.
She's making Fast and the Furious money now.
Yeah, she is.
Fast and the Furious 8. Matchbox 20. Oh, man.
This is a great album. Great
His
album.
Solo stuff is pretty good, too.
Mm-hmm.
Rob Thomas.
Mm-hmm. That I don't know if I've ever been
really loved. My hand that's touched me. Yeah, see, and that's the good mark of a truly good song. You want to sing along with it. This song actually holds a lot of place. It has a small bit of history in Reading. Not a lot. Small.
Really?
And by small, I mean that Ashley Angel from the band O-Town performed this song, and I'm pretty sure this is the one that got him into O-Town.
That's a very small connection, yes.
I said small. It's still a connection of some sort.
Okay.
He could have sang Push from Matchbox 20, and then I would have said it on that song. This one right here, this song just had its 20th anniversary.
Wow.
20... Was it 20? Or was it 20? Oh, I'm sorry. 22, I believe. I believe it came out in 95. 22 years? This is Wonderwall by Oasis. Fantastic. Okay, so we're getting close to the end of the show, actually. And so we're now going to have to... We're gonna call it quits here. We're going to lower this down here. And we're gonna say goodnight to all of you. Thanks for joining us tonight. There is a lot more to this playlist.
Absolutely.
Like, we were just kind of stream of conscious putting it out there to just say how we associated these songs. There's tons more on this list. We're going to have them on our website.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have the link to this Spotify playlist so you can hear it all in one time and relive them all yourself. So it's amazing. Thank you again to Barry McLaughlin from
yes.
Game Night in a Can for being on our show.
Be sure to check out their website at gamenightinacan.com and
buy your own on amazon.com and hottopic.com
and become a Nyakian.
Exactly.
Yuck, 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 yuck. It's just fun to say.
This has been We're a Little Behind with Chris and Jen Gomez on KCNR 1460 AM.
Trump enumerated some of his administration's accomplishments since he's taken office.
We have taken action to repeal the EPA's so-called Clean Power Plan, and we have ended, finally, the war on clean, beautiful coal. People going back to work. They're going back to work. Over the last 9 months, we have removed job-killing regulations at a record pace.
And he urged passage of his tax reform plan.
Reducing our crushing...